Welcome to the Artist Work Ethic Podcast. I'm Mike Pelak. I'm a screenwriter, actor, and filmmaker who's always looking to maximize my time and potential as I work to break in. In this podcast, I talk to artists of all kinds who have seen success in their fields about their process, habits, and work ethic. Today on the show is Stevie Williams. Stevie is the singer for the Australian punk band Clowns. Clowns was nominated for the 2019 ARIA Award for Best Hard Rock or Heavy Metal Album. They've toured extensively and will be supporting NOFX on their final Australian shows. Clowns has a new record out now on Fat Records called Endless. A couple quick things before we jump into the episode. I've talked in the past about myself working on breaking into screenwriting. Please check out blackoilfilms.com/screenwriting. There you can check out some of the screenplays I've written. I have the first 10 pages of each one uploaded, but feel free to email me at theartistsworketheticpodcast@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to send you a full script if you're interested in reading. Last thing before we get into the episode, I would love anyone listening to subscribe, rate, and review the Artist's Work Ethic Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us put the show out there for more people to listen to. All right, Stevie, thank you for coming on with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So how is DIY and punk rock and sort of the ethics around that contributed to or informed the way that you work today?
Start in the band's origins. We were fresh out of high school. And I guess, you know, as is the tale for a lot of punk bands, it's just like a bunch of kids grouping together, playing music. And I think like more so the DIY ethic chose us rather than us choosing it. It was probably the only way that us as a bunch of teenagers could really grab the wheel and drive on our music career. And also, I guess it was a pathway that a lot of other punk bands that we admired had sort of taken.
Did you have any doubts in what you were doing along the way? And if so, how did you kind of push through those and just persist on?
You know, like, especially in the earlier years, I think we had dumb confidence. I never doubted myself. I was born with a creative spark, and I had to play in a band. I had to produce music. And there was just not a doubt in my mind that it was all going to fall over and that it was going to be embarrassing. And even in times historically, when I look back and I think to myself like, oh, maybe now with a bit more life experience, I would have done this a little bit different or whatever. At the time, there was no self-doubt. We really just took it and went with it. And for better or worse, here we are, five albums in.
I mean, dude, I have a similar thing that I've pondered recently is I have a weird like confidence, but it's only in like the projects that I'm making. I don't really have it in a lot of other parts of my life, but for some reason I'm like, you know, with a podcast, with a film, with whatever, I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And I feel like it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. And it's usually not. And it just kind of, you know, you keep climbing those ladders all the way up.
Totally. And I think I get a similar thing. Like I'm not, I don't bring dumb, delusional confidence into every aspect of my life. Yeah. There are definitely things that I look at, be like, oh, you know, maybe it would be cool to do this, but I don't feel like, you know, I can do it. Sometimes I get the same spark. I mean, over here in Melbourne, I'm just like a full freelancer, sole trader. Like 2 years ago, I just had this, I woke up and I was like, I could become a DJ at like nightclubs in Melbourne and just use that as my job. And then I managed to make that work. You know, I've started teaching singing lessons as well, which I get, again, like I just sort of, I have a Instagram following, which has grown from being in the band and I guess becoming, you know, known to a lot of people by playing lots of gigs. And then one day I was like, you know what, I reckon I could just become a singing teacher to people like that. But if you said, for example, like I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and be like, I reckon I could start a restaurant. Like, I don't think I could start a restaurant. I don't think I could start, you know, there's a lot of things that I wouldn't bring that confidence to, but there's an intuitive aspect to it. I think sometimes I just feel like I can do something. And generally when I'm hit with that inspiration, I feel like, and maybe I'm just rocking into it with big dick energy, you know. I can do it because, but yeah, it's not the case in everything.
for sure. What's an example in your career where you've made your own luck through your hard work, you know, relating to the band, something sort of out of the box that, you know, maybe not everyone would do, but has set you apart from other bands?
One thing that I guess moment that happened in our history that I do look back on, and I think it was definitely a lot like some hard advice, but some really good advice. We have back in the day, I don't think we have it anymore in the age of, you know, internet and stuff. We had a music industry directory in Australia, and I just went through it, and I was just like calling booking agents saying like, I've just started this band Clowns. We haven't played our first gigs yet, but do you want to be our booking agent? You know, and no booking agent wants to start booking a band full of inexperienced teenagers that have no idea what they're doing. I mean, even the fact that I just like was cold calling booking agents was a sign that I was inexperienced. And one of the people, I have no idea who they are. I don't know if we've ever crossed paths again, but they were obviously just like frustrated that I had called them. They were in some sort of, some moment of frustration. And they were just like, look, I would not be interested in booking a band of teenagers that have hardly even played their first gig. What you need, it takes 500 gigs, she said. It takes 500 gigs to get a band to a level of where we might even think about booking them. So go back and play 500 gigs and then give me a call. And I think just being a little bit of a shit stirrer, I was in my mind, I felt hurt. My ego was bruised. But I thought to myself, like, nah, no way. I'm going to play 500 gigs and then I'm going to call this number back. And then I'm going to say, we just played 500 gigs and I don't even want to be booked by you anymore. And we did, you know, it took us like 5 or 6 years and we were just playing like week after week after week. We were playing gigs to no one. I mean, we were finding out that some gigs that we booked, we thought were going to be awesome, but they weren't. Some gigs that we booked, we thought were just going to be like shitty ones where no one would come, but they ended up being some of the best.
Hey everyone, just wanted to mention that I also recently launched my brand new Substack. I'll be putting out some writing through Substack each week, and that's also how you can stay up to date on this podcast, as well as other projects I'm involved in. I'm in the middle of a series of 4 articles detailing experiencing my first punk show back when I was 16, and how that led to me booking my first show just 7 months later. I hope you subscribe to read along at mikepelak.substack.com. That's mikepelak.substack.com.
And, you know, eventually we did get to 500 gigs and I was like, that was really good advice. Like now I've got all of this experience, regardless of what a gig turns out at, you still learn something, especially early on in those days. And yeah, I never had the confidence to call the number back and say, hey, you were exactly right. From there on out, I was on my own journey and I was like, that was good advice. Sometimes the best advice comes hard. So
yeah, absolutely. How do you think that drive and the work ethic you have instilled in you impacted your journey to Fat Wreck?
As the story goes with us getting on Fat Wreck, we were kind of just like known to the label because we had found ourselves on tours with a lot of their more, current bands like Pairs, Bad Cop, Get Dead. We were just crossing paths with them all the time. And somewhere along the way, yeah, like we had met them. They were throwing a party in Australia at a music conference called Big Sound. And they, you know, for a long time, they were a bit of a dream label and they still are a dream label, although they're a reality label for us now. And I just thought to myself, you know, I guess maybe this comes down to that sort of dumb confidence, but I was like, you know what? I'm just going to fly to Brisbane, which is like 1500 Ks away from where I live. I'm just going to go to the party and shake hands with these people and, you know, see where that goes. The party itself actually proved to be not like didn't bring anything. Like, of course I shook hands with the people and put a face to a name, but it, you know, we didn't really like meet each other. We didn't have any sort of like meaningful interactions at the party. And I walked away from it being like, not bummed, but just being like, you know, that didn't really go exactly how I had, I guess, hoped. And then I ran into them at the airport the next day, which was really interesting. Yeah, I was just like flying out of Brisbane back to Melbourne at 6 a.m. They were also flying back to Melbourne. And then it was from there that we had that we ended up like sort of like catching up, meeting, and it all kind of like sparked from there.
I think that that is a, it's like a perfect answer to, you know, the create your own luck thing is where someone may not have taken that extra step to spend however much on a plane ticket and drop what they're doing for a couple of days and fly out there. Like that's just, I feel like that's mm-hmm. that next step up that separates some people totally. From others, you know?
And there was a big, well, they're not a huge risk. I mean, the biggest risk was that I was going to go to Brisbane, hang out with a bunch of my friends, go to this party and come home having had a good time. But there, I was sort of like casting my rod into the pond of luck. You know, I was thinking, maybe I'm going to meet these people and at some stage it might turn into a record deal. Maybe it won't. And then as luck would have it, it did. Now we're here.
So how are you structuring your day to kind of manage everything in your life from the band to practice to touring to the business of the band and whatever else you have going on? How are you structuring all that stuff?
Well, because I do all of my work just freelance, I guess from month to month, I can choose to prioritize what I'm paying most attention to. For the last month, I didn't book in a lot of work for myself because I just knew that a lot of stuff was going to come up for the album, stuff that I just couldn't even predict, you know, things like radio interviews, like podcasts, or, you know, I did a editorial piece, like Rolling Stone just got into our email and they were like, hey, we want you to do an editorial piece on what inspires you to play in the band. And we need it in 48 hours, 1500 words. So I was like, okay, cool. I was just like sort of on call and ready to start doing that stuff. Now that the album is out, sort of in the process of restructuring my month of November and for the rest of the year, I'm guessing not as much stuff is gonna pop in. But yeah, you know, I've kind of just like built this sort of like freelance artistic life, and I'm open to any sort of work as it sort of comes in. And it's found itself to be a pretty fun little journey too, like, every now and again, I'll wake up to get an email saying like, oh, you know, this rock venue in Melbourne wants to start running an emo night and we want you to do it. And I just say, okay, cool. This is my new job. Hopefully next year the album is, you know, getting in the minds and the ears of a whole bunch of people, and it's going to produce a bunch of cool show offers. And then I'll just structure my month, my week, my days around that.
I feel like kind of a theme that I keep hearing from you in different ways too is that you're very open to things and you're willing to say yes to things. And I feel like that's been, you know, as I'm 70 episodes into talking to different artists about, you know, their work ethic and their drive and the this and that, like, definitely a recurring theme is people say yes and are open to opportunities. And I hear a lot of that from you, you know, everything mm-hmm. from club DJ to singing lessons to just, I'm going to clear my schedule for a month and just be open to everything that's coming my way. And I think that's probably served you well in your career. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And it's one of those, it can be like really scary to open your entire month in the off chance that things are going to happen, like Rolling Stone want you to write 1500 words in 48 hours. But I guess, you know, it's the life that I chose, and I've gotten a lot of cool opportunities by allowing the room for things to come in and taking them. And it comes down to that intuition that I think we were talking about earlier as well. Like, it just feels right to do that. In the past, when I've had jobs that are soaking up all of my time and that I need, you know, I know from January 1st that until December 31st of that year, I'm dedicating 5 days a week to this. That has never really felt right. And then those feelings are compounded when things happen, like, you know, a podcast opportunity comes up or an interview comes up and I need to take a day off, and then I'm not able to fit it in. And then I start to feel like, you know, you never really know when one of those opportunities that comes in that is going to be something that's really worthwhile or not worthwhile. And 9 times out of 10, they're not worthwhile. 9 times out of 10, it's like just a fun you know, conversation that's going to end up on somebody's podcast, and you know, a bunch of people are going to listen to it. But then, like, there's a sliver, there's a fraction of amount where, like, you do something like that, and then for some reason, it just reaches new ears, reaches new and new opportunities breed from it, and you have to take them all, otherwise, you'll never find that fraction. So,
yeah, and I almost feel like it could be like never having been on your side of, we'll call it a publicity circuit. It's almost like, I imagine it being like touring, where you're going to get the, you know, the shows where you're just playing to the other bands, you know, and then you're going to have the shows where you're playing to 2,500 people. And it's kind of like, but you never know in even those smaller rooms, who's that one or two people, you know, standing in the back watching, you know, and yeah, where those, you know, that serendipitous stuff of where that could lead to.
Yeah, fully. And I think you've just got to be up for the journey. You know, it's not, you know, if you look at our Instagram, if you look at our, all the stuff that we publicize, like that's just a reel of highlights. You know, we don't publicize when we rock up to Eastern European country and we've only sold 50 tickets. You know, the next day we post on our Instagram, we say, thank you, that was a really amazing gig. And then we post like photos of a festival that we played 6 months ago. You never really know. You never know when you might come across those meaningful interactions and those meaningful moments. And I think at the core of it, you have to just be along for the ride and with an attitude of yes, with an attitude of being open to anything, with a good, you know, with a good attitude towards it. And sometimes things happen and sometimes they don't. And it's cool when both outcomes happen.
So you're sitting down to write a song. Are you like an early morning guy, late night, middle of the night, or just whenever you have that moment to squeeze it in?
Yeah, the moment I never sit down and go, oh, I'm going to write a song now. The inspiration just hits, and it often hits, actually, it mostly hits when it shouldn't, you know, like the most classic one is like 4 a.m. or something, like just can't sleep. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, this amazing riff just came into my head. And then I get out of bed and then I play the riff. I get a shitty little voice memo of it. And then I go back to sleep. So I've got a file of it, because if I go to sleep, it's gone. It's fully gone the next day. But yeah, I'm not like a 9-to-5 creative where I just wake up and then I clock on at 9. Finish at 5, I let all the creative ideas come out. I let them come out free range. And I don't know, that's just kind of how my brain works. It I can never predict when the inspirado is gonna hit. And when it hits, I jump on and I take it as far as it can go. But if it's not there, it's not there. And I do something else.
Awesome. Anything that you want to plug? You've got Endless that's out now on Fat Wreck. Anything else going on?
No, just listen to the album and hope to see you in your town soon. And you can, I don't know, follow us on Instagram or whatever if you want to keep up.
Awesome. Well, Stevie, thank you for coming on with me today.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. Please subscribe to the Artist Work Ethic podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, and please rate and review the show. Follow us on Instagram at The Artist's Work Ethic and check out theartistsworkethic.com.